Hello, and welcome to Mirkwood Design's Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff, and this is podcast number 11. And today is February 14th, 2010, Valentine's Day. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. Just head over to mirkwooddesigns.com. That's mirkwooddesigns.com. The bumper music for today's podcast is Plaisir d'amour, a classical French love song written in 1780. The theme of this podcast is loosely based on Mardi Gras because day after tomorrow is Mardi Gras or Fat Tuesday. And that's the only French song I know. So it's Plaisir d'amour. And I wanted to clarify something. Somebody asked me about this. Anytime I talk about my website or my blog, I mean the same thing. If you go to mirkwooddesigns.com or to mirkwooddesigns.blogspot.com, you end up in the same place. And I hope that cleared up any confusion that there might have been. I know my sister was a little confused at first, and she said, I keep typing in mirkwooddesigns.com, and it takes me someplace else. Well, that's okay. It's supposed to do that. Also, I'd like to bring your attention again to my ongoing reward for photos of your work inspired by my podcasts and my blog. So far, only two people have sent photos, and they've each received their fabulous reward. As a matter of fact, if you're a fan of Darla, the scientific quilter, and if you're not, you should be, she recently posted a picture of the reward I sent her, and there is a link to that particular blog on my own blog, so just go to my blog and you can see the reward that she received. I'm not guaranteeing that that'll be the same reward for everyone, but I will say the first two I've given out, that's the reward they received. I've had so many really great emails and comments on my blog by faithful listeners, and I've been completely remiss in thanking you for your listenership. I really need to start a list by name so I can thank you all individually, and I do hope to do that going forward. Please forgive me if I have not thanked you personally for your comments. I receive the most lovely emails, the comments on iTunes. People have been so very kind, and I just really appreciate it, and I think of you all a lot, and if it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't continue doing this. So your feedback lets me know I'm on the right track. And if you have ideas for projects, for topics, constructive criticism, or just plain old criticism, please don't hesitate to email me or to post something on my blog or give me a review in iTunes, whatever makes you feel comfortable. And don't forget, you can always just do it anonymously. I don't need to know who you are. In the meantime, please know I really do read and treasure every email and comment, and I appreciate your kind words again. Since I'm recording this on February 14th, I want to wish a fellow podcaster a happy birthday. What a cool thing to have your birthday on Valentine's Day. Anyway, so happy birthday to Jennifer Ruvalcaba of Patchwork and Pacifiers. And if you're not a fan of Jennifer's podcast, why not? There is a link to her podcast on my blog, as well as I mentioned Darla's. Both of them I've been in communication with recently, so I just wanted to kind of give them both plugs. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of fantastic podcasts out there dealing with not only quilting, but crafting in general. Go to iTunes and enter the words quilt, craft, sewing. You're going to see so many great podcasts out there, and there are new ones showing up all the time. My two Alice in Wonderland fabrics that I designed are available for sale on spoonflower.com. Both are selling pretty well, and I think that's partly because of the upcoming Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland movie that's coming out next month, March 2010. By the way, if you're planning to see the movie starring the ever-fabulous Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter, my Alice in Wonderland website has been asked to partner with Fandango, which is the movie ticket website where you can buy your movie tickets for any movie theater online. Again, that's Fandango. They have actually contacted me to partner with me to be able to sell their tickets and also special limited edition gift cards. I don't have that link up yet, but my Alice in Wonderland website will have that link sometime. I'm hopeful this week that'll be active. You'll be able to purchase tickets at your movie theater through my website in partnership with Fandango, and I will get a little commission from it. So if you're going to go see the movie anyway, why not purchase through my site? I'll put a link to my Alice in Wonderland website on my blog so that you can go check it out. I hope maybe by the time you hear this podcast, that link will be active. My partnership with Fandango will be active. I'm kind of honored because I purchase my tickets through them all the time, so it's kind of exciting that they contacted me. And I've had that Alice in Wonderland website, well, it's been growing, but I initially started it in 1997. My sisters, I've mentioned this in the podcast before, but my sisters and my mom and I used to have a chat room in AOL, and every single night someone would be in that chat room, and we decided what we would do is every day of the week have something else going on. So Monday was maybe what's your favorite website, Tuesday was a word of the day, Wednesday was this, and so forth. And I remember that one of the events was a poem. Maybe it was Wednesday was poetry night, so people would go look up poems. Well, I wrote a poem, which is on my Alice in Wonderland website, and Alice in Wonderland is my very favorite book. It's the first real book that I read as a child. I was about 6 years old when I read it, and it just fascinated with me, especially the Jabberwocky, or the Jabberwock. The poem is Jabberwocky. The actual creature is called the Jabberwock. I was fascinated by this creature, and the poem Jabberwocky is a wonderful, lyrical, crazy, wacky poem. And I wrote my little poem called An Ode on Alice, influenced and inspired by Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll. So if you go to my website, which I'll have a link on my blog, my Alice in Wonderland website, you can check out all my fun activities. It's an interactive website, and you can read the poem that precipitated the entire Alice in Wonderland interactive website in the beginning, 13 whole years ago. That's just amazing to me to think it was that far back, but that's when it was. Speaking of Alice in Wonderland, by the way, number 10 in my continuing Alice in Wonderland Red work is Alice holding the bottle that says, "Drink me." There are two more in my Alice in Wonderland Red work series coming up, and then I'll think of some new series or new project to do that will be part of a continuing thing for the next 6 months or so. So today's theme for the podcast is, like I said, it's kind of loosely based on Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras roughly translates to Fat Tuesday, and this refers to the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday in the Christian calendar, and it's the day when people would make sure that they've used up all of their cooking fat and sugar before the season of Lent, because those things were kind of frowned upon. Those were luxuries, those were considered good eating, and during Lent, you know, it's very austere, it's a time of penitence and so forth, preparing for Easter. So if you're Polish, or you live in or near a Polish community, you're no doubt familiar with punchkis, which are these enormous, deep-fried, filled donuts. They are so sinful. I think there's about 1,000 calories in each one if they're made the proper way with lard. I never had one until I met my husband, who is 100% Polish. I'm only Polish by marriage. And ever since then, punchkis have been in my life. I am really fortunate to live directly across the street from a bakery that bakes punchkis every year, and they have the big punchki fest. They have the signs out a month in advance. You have to put your order in if you want more than just a couple. I mean, I can walk over there during the day and have, you know, take one punchki, but if I wanted, say, a dozen to take to my office, I'm kind of out of luck, because they make them. And if you go there on punchki day, they have boxes literally stacked floor to ceiling. And it's just so cool to go in there, and everybody's grabbing their boxes. It's a really nice little bakery. It's a mom and pop little bakery, and I love to see them get the kind of business that they do. They make fantastic breads and cakes and everything, but their punchkis are their traditional Polish punchkis. So if you're ever in Belleville, Michigan, check out the bake shop on Savage Road. It's right across from my house. Well, kitty corner, but walking distance at any rate. They have watched Teddy grow up since he was a little boy, and every time he goes in there now, you know, he's towering over everyone, and it's kind of neat to see that they remember him as little, and now he goes in there and buys boxes and boxes of goodies for himself. That skinny guy, he can eat all that stuff. Let me see. Well, I guess without further ado, let's get on with today's podcast. Stay tuned for the Fiber Arts segment. Today's topic is a pretty beaded sachet. Welcome back. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and you're listening to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity, and this is the Fiber Arts segment. In today's segment, I'm going to talk about beading on fabric and provide a pattern for a really pretty beaded sachet. When I first decided on the theme for this podcast, Mardi Gras, I started thinking about things associated with Mardi Gras in New Orleans, Louisiana, and the first thing that came to mind immediately was beads. Well, I am not prepared to do the customary thing to win a beaded necklace. I think most of you know what I mean. But I did consider providing a beaded necklace design, and then I decided instead to do a segment about beading on fabric. This past summer, I took a class at Quilt University. Oh wait, it's called Quilting Unlimited now. Sorry about that. Quilt University is something else. Anyway, it's called Quilting Unlimited, and it's sponsored by my Quilt Guild, which is the Greater Ann Arbor Quilt Guild in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's an enormous guild, by the way. I've belonged for a few years now, and I am their librarian. The class was taught by Linda Lindsay, whose work is just amazing, and she provided so much material that we couldn't cover it all in the single day-long class. I took what I learned from her class, and I ran with it, and I've enjoyed beading on fabric ever since. Today's Fiber Arts project is just one of the results that sprang from that wonderful class. Beading on fabric is really popular in so many ways. If you're a quilter, you've no doubt seen beading incorporated into, say, crazy quilts. If you make purses, beading is a wonderful way to embellish your creations. And of course, if you make wearable art, well, the possibilities are endless. There are a lot of really great books covering the art of beading on fabric, and on my blog, I'll just provide a few titles for you to check out. On to my tutorial. As usual, the project sheet itself is available on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com, and I've also provided close-up photos of the steps that will help you to visualize the various techniques. I am one of those visual learners, so the more pictures I have, the better, especially if I actually get to watch someone do something. I tend to remember it better. So my tutorials, I hope, are helpful in the sense that they provide the words, but they also provide pictures. Sorry I can't show you in person what I'm doing, but I hope that what I provide is enough to get you started. You can use any fabric you like for the project, but I think you should start with a simple muslin or plain light-colored fabric, because what I need for you to do is use a light box or a window to trace the pattern onto your fabric, and if you use a fabric with a design or a dark fabric, you won't be able to do that. I used really nice white cotton sateen. It has a little bit more texture than a muslin or even just a regular quilting cotton. Now, you also need to back your fabric with something, because if you just were to start stitching on fabric, the thread would pull out of the fabric. Now, for the purposes of the sachet, I backed the fabric with a very thin cotton batting. If you were to be using this on, say, a piece of wearable art on a shirt or whatever, you could use a interfacing or something like that, just to give the fabric a little bit more substance rather than just beading straight on the fabric itself. Again, I used batting for this particular project on the back of my cotton sateen. I used a couple of different kinds of beads for this project. I used size 6 beads and also size 11 seed beads. You can use other sizes, but for the purposes of this project, you do need two sizes, large and small, and you'll also need three colors. I used the colors of Mardi Gras, which are green and purple and gold, and it turned out really nicely, I think. Beads come in different sizes, as you know, and the larger the number, the smaller the beads. For example, a size 11 bead is smaller than a size 6 bead, and I used both size 11 and size 6 for my project. I used a lot of size 11. You'll need green and purple and gold in size 11, and you'll need gold in the size 6, the larger bead, which I think you can also use a size 8, which is a larger bead too. Most beads are glass and their edges can be rather sharp. Not only that, but they're also quite heavy when you put a lot of them on a project. As a result, they require a special thread. You can't use just a regular cotton sewing thread or even a polyester. I use a nylon thread for beading that's called Nymo, and I believe the size I use is D, which I think is a pretty standard size for working with seed beads. There are a lot of other brands available. You can go to any craft store, or better yet, go to a beading specialty store. They will help you out choose the right thread. As far as needles go, I really like John James needles, and I use their beading needles in size 12. And I prefer a longer needle. Beading needles come in a shorter needle and a longer needle. I like the feel of the longer needle in my hands. I tend to use longer needles even for quilting. Even though I know quilting you're supposed to use those little dinky ones, I like a longer needle. That way I feel it in my hand. To begin stitching, you'll use a regular quilter's knot or just a small knot in your thread, and you want to secure the beginning of your stitching by taking you'll knot your thread, run it through the batting or backing in the fabric, up through the top, and then back down twice, right in the same spot, you know, like a couple threads away. That secures the end of that thread really well, because there is nothing worse than getting your beading project all done and the end of the thread comes out, and guess what happens? All your beads end up all over the house. Ask me how I know about that. I have beads everywhere in my house. And I have beads in my house. I have threads in my house. I have everything you can think of craft related all over my house, because things happen. Anyway, secure the end of your thread. When you get to the end, after you've done, your thread has run out, you're ready to secure your thread at the end, do the same thing. What you're going to do is you're going to take a couple of stitches right near the last bead you've sewn on, and you're going to go back down through into the backing or the batting, and you're going to secure it with a nice little knot there. There are a lot of really cool beading techniques, but I just wanted to provide a few pretty simple and basic ones on my sachet project. You're going to learn the basic line stitch, a really pretty lattice stitch. It is so effective when you see it in person. And one thing that I learned in my class I took over this summer, this really cool stitch called a stacked flower. It looks amazing in person. It's hard to tell from the pictures. Certainly from my illustration of how to do it, you can't tell, but it is a three-dimensional flower. It looks just like, I think it's a sea urchin that has that kind of rounded look. It's so cool looking. And then you're going to end with a 5-bead picot edging all the way around your sachet. Now, in the future, I'm going to add some more beading projects. I had such a good time designing this one, putting it together, and there are pages and pages and pages of different stitches that I just would love to share with you. So I think what I'm going to do is design some more beading projects, obviously not all sachets, but maybe some more interesting, cool things. So I hope you continue to listen to my podcasts and be surprised with some of the cool beading things I'll come up with. Again, there's a link to my project sheet on the website, and there's also a series of photographs to help you see the different techniques kind of up close, the way that they look while I'm doing them. Go to mirkwooddesigns.com to download the project sheet, and stay tuned for the paper arts segment. Today's topic is how to make a festive paper party hat, which is based on the traditional pressman's cap made out of a sheet of newspaper. Just in time for you to wear to your Mardi Gras celebration. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is the Paper Arts segment, where today we're making festive paper party hats for your Mardi Gras celebration. You can find complete instructions on the website, mirkwooddesigns.com. I can't even say my own name, can I? On the website, you will also see a lot of photographs of the process. This is one of those things where I learned it better by watching someone do this. I've known how to make this hat for a long, long time. And I think I did learn it from a teacher in school, I think even in grade school. I tried to illustrate it as best I could in the project sheet. I drew all those as I was folding it. I was kind of drawing pictures of what it looked like to me. The photographs might help you, but if you try it a couple times, I think you'll understand the process of putting it together. The hardest part is once you get all the last folds made and you have to open the hat out and kind of flatten it so that you get all those corners crisp. And it's weird at first because it doesn't make sense, but as soon as you open it out, you'll say, oh, I see how this works. And I think you'll figure it out. I think I'm making it sound harder than it is, but hey, it's a piece of newspaper. If you go wrong, grab another piece of newspaper and start over again. It's a really cute project. I think kids would really enjoy doing this because it's, you know, I the very first newspaper hat I learned to make, I think we all did, kind of looked like a sailboat or something like that. And actually, at one point in the step of making the pressman's cap, it looks sort of like that. Before you start making some more of the folds, it looks like you're saying, wait a minute, this is the sailboat hat. Well, you do get that far, and then you do some other things with it. So you could actually start with a sailboat hat and then take it a step further and you'll have your pressman's cap. You know, whenever I think about Mardi Gras in New Orleans, the first thing I think about are those crazy costumes everybody wears. There are several official parades and everyone who takes part wears some sort of a costume. So if you're going to attend any Mardi Gras party, you really need to have a costume or at least a festive party hat. And if you remember my podcast, what podcast was it? Number 3, I think it was, the Halloween podcast. Remember I told you to keep the mask template in mind for Mardi Gras? Well, now's time to drag that template out and make a mask, make a festive party hat, and you will be all set. I'll put a link, because you may have lost it, I'll put a link to the festive party hat too, but the Mardi Gras mask template, the Halloween mask template, you can make into a Mardi Gras mask template on the website. So you'll have a couple of things for your paper art segment this time. I'm pretty sure that you already have what you need to make the paper party hat. All you need to begin is a full-size sheet of newspaper. You know, when you buy a newspaper, when you open it all the way out, the sheet's like really wide, and then you fold it in half and it's like the regular newspaper. That's what you need. Not a little tabloid paper, but like the New York Times, that size of newspaper. And you need the full big, I wish I knew what that's called, the big huge sheet of it, broadside or something like that. And I have the instructions of how to fold it. And you just simply follow the folding instructions and you'll end up with this cap that actually is called a pressman's cap. And a pressman, by the way, is the person who runs the newspaper presses. And that cap was designed, believe it or not, it's from the mid-1700s, and it was originally designed to keep ink out of the pressman's hair while he's running the presses. So you can wear this fabulous pressman's cap to keep ink out of your hair if you're working on your car. That's actually something I ran across when I was doing research for this little segment, said, you can wear this while you're working on your car to keep the grease out of your hair. Well, I'm not sure how many people would do that, but anyway, so when you get your pressman's cap done, because I know you'll have to make one of these, use your imagination and your creativity to come up with ways to embellish it. You can put feathers on it. You can put a big bow in the front. You can paint it, put glitter on it. It's like a blank canvas, or leave it as is, because frankly, I made 3 of these for the podcast to practice and all to make sure I got it right. One of them I did decorate. I have feathers on it and all that jazz. But the other 2 were so cool, just plain newsprint. They there was something really cool about them. Wouldn't it be neat if maybe you lacquered them and you had this really cool hat you could wear out of newspaper, especially if it was, say, a special edition of something, or maybe out of the Sunday funnies, you know? It would be in color. So once you make your newspaper hat, you can wear it as is. You could decorate it. Let creativity be your guide. And I have put photos of the process on the blog. I hope that you can follow them. I think the project sheet has pretty good folding instructions. I did all those illustrations that I hope make sense to you. Again, I'll have a link also to the Halloween mask template so you can download that and decorate it for Mardi Gras. And keep in mind that traditional colors of Mardi Gras, at least in New Orleans, are green, purple, and gold. Up next is the recipe segment. And today we are making creme brulee, which is my favorite dessert. I hope it's yours. And it is so simple. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Merkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is the recipe segment. Today, we're making traditional creme brulee. I've mentioned several times before that my son Teddy is a fairly accomplished at many things. He does origami, he is a singer, he's a dancer, he's an actor, he's a brilliant student, he is studying chemical engineering at the University of Michigan, he's a minor in German. He's kind of like a jack of all trades. Anything he does well. And one of the things he learned to do when he was younger in grade school, he learned to bake a couple of things. Well, I don't know, baking is not really the right word. I guess cook, prepare a couple of dishes. One was the truffles, if you remember from last time. That was his recipe for truffles. Today is the recipe for creme brulee. He has wowed so many people with this recipe because, you know, it's a cool recipe. You won't believe how easy it is, and I'll get into that in a second, but it is a very simple recipe, and I think that you'll really enjoy making it, and especially enjoy eating it. And I'll just let you in on a secret. I'm being visited by one of my cats. It is my cat, Mitty, who has just walked in to visit us, but she's pretty quiet, so I don't think she'll bother me. Okay, so creme brulee. I was always mystified by creme brulee. The first time I had it in a restaurant, it was this magical concoction. The top was all hard like glass and kind of bittersweet. And on the inside was all this really luscious and silky smooth custard. And you know what? There really is no mystery to it at all. I will share with you a couple of things that make the perfect creme brulee, and I think you'll be happily surprised at how simple and elegant the dessert really is. First of all, the base of creme brulee is simply a classic custard, which is not a very difficult thing to make. Custard comprises only four things: heavy cream, egg yolks, sugar, and vanilla. That's it. And there are two secrets to making the perfect custard. One is that after you cook the custard on the stovetop, you have to strain it through a sieve to make sure that there are no curdled eggs in it. Sometimes if people skip that step, it's not going to be silky smooth. So when you make the mixture on the stovetop, you cook it on the stovetop, you pour it through a sieve into the custard cups. That takes care of any possibility of anything lumpy. You want it to be silky smooth. And the other secret when you're baking it in the oven is to use a process called bain-marie. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but it's French for water bath. And what that does, you take your small custard cups and you put them in a large, I use a large Pyrex casserole dish. And then very carefully, you pour about a half inch water in the bottom of the casserole dish. And that helps to sort of cook the custard slowly. Instead of the heat from the oven touching the custard cups directly and heating it that way, which can make a very tough custard, when you cook it in a water bath, that cooks it gently. The water simmers and it cooks the custard slowly and gently, and it maintains that silky smoothness, which is the secret to a perfect custard. I've got photos on the website of that process. It's not hard to do. The biggest thing you need to worry about as far as the water bath is, number one, start with hot water already. So you want to have a pan of hot water on the stove. Number two, pour it into the casserole dish using some sort of a pitcher or something where you can control the flow of water. Number three, don't pour any in the custard cups by accident. If you've done that, that's going to be difficult for them to be the right texture and consistency. And number four, do not pour too much water in. The water can't come up any more than halfway up the side of the custard cup. Otherwise, you run the risk of having the water boil over into the custard cup, which happened to Teddy one time before he perfected it, and it destroyed the custard. if you follow those rules, you're going to end up with a perfect custard. Now, you can eat that custard just the way it is. You can use it and put fresh fruit on it, serve it that way. It's quite delicious and wonderful, but it's not creme brulee. That's the creme part of creme brulee. But the brulee part of creme brulee, it means broiled. And that's the part that people are worried most about. And I'll tell you, you don't really have anything to worry about. There's two ways to accomplish the broiling part. The easiest way, and something you probably already have in your house, you probably already have an oven with a broiler. What you do after your custard cups are completely cooled, you put them in the fridge for several hours. You do not do this right after they're out of the oven. It will not work. You'll end up with a gloppy mess. You need to start with perfectly chilled custard cups. You need to make sure there's no moisture on the top of the custard. I take a paper towel and I kind of blot any moisture that might have accumulated while they've been sitting in the fridge. And then you put a very thin layer of just table sugar on the top. What I do is I take like a teaspoon, pour it on top of the custard cup, and I kind of shake it. So it kind of covers the top of the custard pretty well. And you're going to set all your custard cups on a metal baking tray and put it under the broiler. Now, you need to stand next to your stove or oven when you're doing this. Don't leave it. It happens really fast. The top of your custard should be about 4 inches from the broiler element. You're going to turn your broiler on high, and you're going to stand there, and you're going to keep your eye on that, because it will take no more than a minute, maybe two at the absolute outside, before the top of your custard is broiled. You do not want to walk away, because I'll tell you, there's nothing worse. There is a really fine line between, you know, the nice broiled sugar on top of your custard and a bitter, nasty black mess that smokes all over the place. Now, I prefer, and then I need to say too, they're not quite ready to eat when you take them out of the oven. It takes about maybe 30 seconds for it to harden, for the top of the sugar to harden. So when you take it out of the oven, set it aside for a minute, and it'll be ready to serve right then. And don't let, when you're going to make the creme brulee, don't make a whole bunch of them and think I'm going to serve them tomorrow, including the broiling part. You need to broil it right before you're going to serve it, because if you were to broil your creme brulee and then set it aside, say put it in the fridge and think I'm going to have it later, it will soften the sugar on the top. It'll still taste really good, but it's not going to have the crack with the spoon. That's the sign of a properly done creme brulee. When you hit it with the side of your spoon and it cracks, it won't do that. It'll taste good, but it won't be the same consistency that I think you're looking for. The other way to make the brulee part of the creme brulee is the way that we do it at our house. When Teddy perfected this recipe a few years ago, he received for Christmas 2 kitchen torches. So we now have 2 kitchen torches. They are small butane torches. In a professional kitchen, they have much larger ones. In our kitchen, we just have the little ones. You can buy them now because creme brulee is so popular. You can buy those torches just about anywhere. They use butane. You just fill it up following the instructions on the butane can. It is a pretty safe device. Don't let children use it. Follow the instructions on how to use it. Just don't point it at your skin. Don't point it at anything flammable. The only thing you want to point it at is what you intend to heat with it. You can use it for a lot of different things. We only use it for creme brulee. So again, you prepare your creme brulee. You prepare your custard the same way. Make sure it is properly chilled. You want to remove any moisture from the top. I use, again, a little piece of paper towel and blot any possible moisture off the top. Thin layer of sugar. Moving MIDI out of the way. Thin layer of sugar. And then you're going to set your custard cup on a metal baking pan, just for safety's sake. You can do it on your stovetop. You basically don't want to do it, say, on a tabletop that's got linen on it or whatever. You just don't want to have any accidents. And do not hold the cup while you're doing it, by the way. Lesson learned. Set it aside. And then you're going to start your torch. I find it easier. Our torches have a latch where you can have the flame on without having to push the button. You really need to kind of watch that. You want to make sure you know how to turn it off when you're ready to turn it off, too. And then you will start heating the sugar on the top of the custard, constantly moving the flame around the top of the custard. You will notice it starts to bubble and it will get quite brown. You don't want it to get black. You just want it to get a dark amber. It should be pretty dark. And you want to make sure that all of the sugar on the top of your custard has been caramelized. You don't want granulated sugar on the top of your custard. Everything should be caramelized. And the same way, if you've used your broiler, you set it aside for a minute or so, and it's good to go. Those are really the only secrets to making creme brulee. Now, I know it sounds a little bit scary as far as using the torch, but give it a try using your broiler in your stove. It's fairly easy. People will be so terribly impressed by the fact that you made this fabulous restaurant dessert. Let me tell you, restaurants can crank this out so fast because all they have to do is have a whole bunch of refrigerated custards, and the bruleeing part doesn't take any time at all. So it's amazing when you go and you think, oh, they charged me, $5, $6, $7 for this creme brulee. Think about what you would pay to make it at home, and I guarantee you it's going to taste better. The one you've made is going to taste better than any you've had at any restaurant. That's true, at least at our house. Now, you can serve your creme brulee with fresh fruit. I prefer mine as is. Or you could make, say, a coulis to go over it, which is just simply you would take some fresh fruit, put it in a pan on the stovetop, add some sugar, a little bit of water or lemon juice, and cook it until it becomes almost a sort of a jelly consistency, or preserves is the better choice. And you can serve that on your creme brulee or alongside your creme brulee if you like. It's pretty with fresh fruit, I think, but as far as eating goes, I just like it as is. And last week when I made these and I took the pictures, it took every bit of my will to not sit and eat every one of the creme brulees when I made them. It was really hard to say no, I'll tell you. That's the single thing that I had in my house recently that I had a really rough time staying away from. Well, I hope you give the recipe a try. Don't be afraid of the kitchen torch. Don't be afraid of the broiler. And remember, you're going to find the recipe along with all of the show notes on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. Up next is the grab bag, and this time, who knows what I'm going to talk about. See you in a minute. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is the Grab Bag. If you're a follower of my blog, you might remember a recent post I called Finding Beauty in an Online Game. That was precipitated by my foray into a game that's popular on the social networking site Facebook. The game's called Farmtown. Now, I know that there are a lot of others. There's Farmville, My Farm, a bunch of others, but this one is Farmtown. And I swore up and down I would never play one of those crazy Facebook games. I mean, everybody's doing the Mafia Wars and all that, and the Farm Town, Farmville. Ugh. Well, I thought they were such time wasters, and I'll be honest, they kind of really are time wasters, but hey, whatever. Anyway, my sisters decided that they needed another neighbor for their farms. And so they ganged up on me. These are my three loving sisters ganged up on me and shamed me into starting a farm in Farmtown. So thank you, Karen, Kathy, and Pat. So I then figured, I'll just make the farm, but I'm not going to do anything with it. So they'll have a neighbor. I don't have to do anything. Yeah, right. Famous last words. So, yeah, I've got my little farm, which is called Mirkwood. Isn't that a surprise? But I decided I was going to flout convention and make my farm into a quilt of crops rather than having animals and houses and rivers and all the other stuff you can have. So my farm is, I do have a little house in the corner. I hate to get rid of it. I mean, I bought it, right? So I have a little house in the corner, but other than that, my entire farm is flowers and an ever-changing array of crops based on when I feel like harvesting them. And, you know, it's kind of turned out kind of pretty. I like the way that they look. And since then, I have discovered that this apparently is some big thing. You can go out on Google and type in farm town designs, and you're going to see animals, cartoon characters, words, quilts. Lots of people are doing this, and I thought I was so original. Well, I also published a couple of pictures, if you read that blog post, a couple pictures of my farm, and I think I also did my husband's farm. I am the manager of his farm on Farmtown, and I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm also the manager of three others, but let's not go there. So I've got these crazy farms. My husband's and mine are both quilty kind of farms, but he puts words in his quilts. Yeah, I'm talking as though he's really doing it. My husband doesn't know where the computer is, much less how to get onto Farmtown. Well, because when you set up Farmtown, it's set up through Facebook. Well, I had to set up a Facebook account for my husband. And that has caused a couple of problems for me. Sometimes I'm in Facebook, think I'm in my account, and I go do things. Turns out I'm using someone else's account, namely my husband's. Well, the other day, I decided to friend a quilter by the name of Joe Cunningham. I'm sure a lot of you probably know Joe Cunningham's work. He's quite famous. His quilting technique is famous. He is also a guitarist and a singer and a composer. So he's near and dear to my heart for two reasons. And he's just this fantastically down-to-earth kind of guy. And when I realized he was on Facebook, I got so excited. So I decided I was going to friend him. And in my note, I said what a fan I was of his and, you know, that I learned my hand quilting technique from him. And so sure enough, a little bit later, he accepts my friend request. And then I looked. I had sent him the friend request from my husband's account. And he sent a message thinking it was my husband who was the quilter saying, oh, I'm going to come on your Facebook and I'm going to look at the pictures of your quilts. This is so great. Oh, I was just mortified when I realized that I had sent the request through my husband's account. Joe Cunningham was all excited to have another guy quilter out there in quiltland. I was so embarrassed. Well, I ended up having to friend him from my own account, explain the situation. Thank goodness he did accept my friendship. I was kind of embarrassed by that. Well, anyway, so word to the wise, if you run more than one Facebook account, pay attention to which account, from which account you're sending something or on which account you're posting something, because, yeah, I'm sure my husband's friends think that he's a little bit crazy, too, because of a couple of mistakes I've made. If you are not familiar with Joe Cunningham, please check out his website. His works, his quilts are really unique. They're amazing bold fabrics, and they're bifurcated by eloquent placement of colorful strips of bias tape. They're abstract. They're wonderful. They hang in museums. I mean, these quilts are so cool, and he is such a cool guy. I'll have the website, link to his website on my website. And Joe, if you're listening to this, I apologize for friending you as my husband, Tedzilla. He's not a quilter, but he certainly enjoys the fruits of my quilting labor. Okay, so that's it for now, folks. Happy Mardi Gras, and I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you continue to listen. Please email me or post comments on my blog to let me know what's on your mind. My email address is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. Ruthann is one word, R-U-T-H-A-N-N. And I do hope to hear from you. And if you're so inclined, please post a rating or a review on iTunes to let folks know what you think of Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. And hey, don't forget about the reward for gallery entries. Check the blog for more information. Don't be shy. You can find links to my podcasts, show notes, projects, and much more on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. By the way, if you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right column, there are links to my projects and my recipe page, as well as the podcast directory page, and also, now, the gallery. Click on those to go directly to all of the projects, tutorials, recipes, gallery, and podcast page. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race. It's an adventure.